sun, little darling, here comes the sun. I say it's all right, it's all right.
So hey everybody, you're on Voices from the Front Lines, your national movement building show. This is your host, Eric Mann, with our producer, Channing Martinez. You're on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, streaming live on the web at www.kpfk.org. And also, do check out our website, www.voicesfromthefrontlines.com. I'm happy to be talking to Zakiya Sankara Jabbar. I know her. She's the co-founder and executive director of a terrific organization called Racial Justice Now. Now being in capital letters with an exclamation point as well. So, Zakiya, very happy to have you on Voices from the Front Lines.
I am so happy to be here. Thank you very much.
Well, one thing I was thinking about is that you're causing a lot of trouble. First of all, racial in the middle of a racist country, justice in an unjust country, but most important, the concept of now, which is being lost. How'd you come up with that?
That's an excellent question, and I appreciate you asking that and explaining our name very specifically. Most folks forget that the now is capitalized, and they certainly forget the exclamation point. And it was very purposeful, obviously, that we did that. And so we did that. We're based in Dayton, Ohio. Not sure if you mentioned that. So it's a small city, small Midwestern town, old industrial town in Southwest Ohio, very, very conservative. You know, like most cities, we have our traditional, so to speak, civil rights organizations like the NAACP and the Urban League. But what Professor Randall and I, Professor Randall being Vernelia Randall, who's the co-founder of Racial Justice Now, the activist professor over at the University of Dayton School of Law for many, many years, and she and I was just frustrated around the lack of correct racial analysis to what was happening here in our local community and around the state. And so we just sort of cooked up the idea, literally sitting in her living room and saying, you know, we're going to start organizing. We're going to be very explicit about organizing around, you know, racial justice issues, specifically that impact black people here in Dayton and around Ohio. So that's sort of the story behind Racial Justice Now, meaning that we were unapologetically going to call a spade and talk about it.
That's great, and you're in a long tradition, you know, SNCC and CORE, and with all due respect to the NAACP and the Urban League who play a role, there's a need for more now. So tell us the story about your son. It's still outrageous, you know, I'm sure you think about it every day, but it is one of the core experiences, not just for you, but for so many black boys in our society. Tell us about that story, please.
Definitely. So the story behind actually founding, you know, Racial Justice Now, as you know, Eric, is my own experience with my then 3-year-old son who was attending a private preschool here in the Dayton area. And he was almost immediately identified once he was accepted into this private sort of elite preschool in a suburb. You know, I didn't realize then as a new mother, he was my only child at the time, you know, that sort of the winds had shifted on what young people are supposed to be learning as early as 3 years old. And the environment was much more extremely structured and really trying to teach academics so early instead of the old school way where children really learn through play. And so, you know, for my son particularly, he was the only African-American child in his particular class at this place. And almost immediately, and I literally mean almost immediately, within the first week of him really attending this private preschool, he was identified as a troublemaker. I was called in and summoned, you know, sort of to the director's office by the teacher and the director of the preschool. And they really did it in a really pathologizing kind of way, you know, it was really through smiles, you know, oh, we think he just needs help. He should be psychologically evaluated. And, you know, if you know, if this child is identified, then your own school district where you live is required by law to provide him services. And it was done so methodically, and I later found out that that was their way of getting rid of black children, poor black children, more specifically. At the time, I was a college student, and so I received the government subsidy Title 20 that pays for child care if you're in college or working. And so at the time, I was working and going to college, and so I qualified for the program. And like I said, I later found out talking to other parents of children, black boys in particular at that school, that they did that all the time to really push us out of the school, to open up, you know, that slot for someone else. And many times for parents, you know, especially young parents, we don't think to ask questions. We usually just go along with what the teachers say about our kids, right, because they're the experts. But I remember, and I was not even politicized at this time. This experience actually really helped to politicize me, because I remember just intuitively thinking, something's wrong with this. You know, like, he's 3 years old. What are you talking about? You know, what's normal? And I remember the question that they never asked or never answered was, what is normal three-year-old behavior? Because the things that they were complaining about, I thought, and it was, and it is still today, was perfectly within the norm for two, three, or four-year-olds. He would have temper tantrums. I think he sometimes bit other students, and other students bit him. And so that was, those were the kinds of things that was happening in the in that environment that they complained about and really singularly picked him out and pathologized him with, and say, you know, you know, they never say this is abnormal, but the kind of language that they use, oh, you know, he can be identified, right? You know, you can get services, and we recommend that you take him to behavioral health. That's what really sort of sparked my interest. I said, behavioral health? Are you saying he's crazy? I mean, because in my mind, that's what they were saying. When you think, when I thought of behavioral health, you mean there's something abnormal wrong with him.
I think this is very important. I mean, in Los Angeles, first of all, it's still a heartbreaking. Every time you tell it, it's heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. And we have had a fight in Los Angeles about the concept of willful defiance, which was put in as a crime in the behavioral code against almost all black boys. So if you think about this as a white Christian society based on repression, really, of psyche, of sexuality, of joy, you know, a Calvinist, nasty, imperialist country, this poor three-year-old beautiful kid is being a three-year-old black boy, and the word you use, pathologized, is great, and it's another form, truly, of a form of genocide.
It is. I was going to connect this, but I'm not sure if you're aware, Eric, but just recently, I mean, after all these years, the U.S. Department of Education has issued guidance on the overrepresentation of black males in special ed and emotional disturbance classes. And if you walk into any urban school district, and I'm sure that's the case for LAUSD as well, is that you will go into what's called an ED class, and the room will be full of black males. It happens in Dayton. It happens all over the country. And this is how parents are duped into allowing their young people, you know, to be identified, and they're supposed to, right, get special services, but in fact, it's just another way to segregate black males from the general population within the public school system. And that very well could have been my son. And these are also young people who are disproportionately impacted by suspensions and expulsions when you look at the data. So I kind of wanted to connect that as well to what's happening as early as 3 years old to black children and black males in particular.
The voice you're hearing is Zakiya Sankara Jabbar. She is one of the directors of Racial Justice Now. You're executive director of Racial Justice Now, and you can hear, of course, in the voice, a very clear fighter for the rights of children, and in particular black children, in this racist society. Let's fast forward, because Zakiya, I also work with you in this thing called the Quarterly School to Prison Pipeline, kind of organizing group. I've also worked with you in Dignity in Schools campaign, of which you're one of the national organizers. Tell me how you're understanding the national scene. I mean, you're building a movement in Dayton. It starts with your own child, which is terrific. And now you're looking at the whole country and seeing this happening to all these black boys. What are you thinking about national strategy?
Yes, Eric. You know, I certainly think that the national strategy has to be connecting to other folks on the ground in other communities across the country. As you know, we just left Los Angeles, and many of the folks in the Dignity in Schools campaign, and including myself from all over the country, joined you all in front of the Los Angeles Board of Education to, you know, push back against this 1033 program and demand an apology. And I will have to say that I actually learned about the 1033 program through the table that you mentioned that you and I sit at, this quarterly school to prison pipeline meeting. And I had no idea that something like that, you know, exists. Thankfully, unfortunately, Dayton Public Schools, no schools in our area actually participate, in that program. But the fact that I learned that a school district had grenade launchers in a tank for schools, I'm thinking about children, and we know, you know, who the children are, you know, that they're targeting for this. You know, I think that building a national movement has served for me to educate me on a lot of these issues that may not necessarily be happening in my backyard, but are certainly happening to other folks, and also learning the similarities of what's happening right here in Southwest Ohio to what's happening in Mississippi, what's happening in Virginia, what's happening, you know, in Los Angeles. There are a lot of similarities, more similarities than there are, you know, differences. And I think the fact that we're able to communicate with one another, able to share strategies, able to learn from one another, will help to bring or build a much larger national strategy and national movement. And I think we should continue to do that.
The voice you're hearing again is Zakiya Sankara-Jabbar. We've worked together now, getting to know each other. I absolutely agree with you that one of the big things about building a national movement is building national relationships of people that really get to know each other. And for the listeners to Voices from the Frontlines, last Friday, the Labor Community Strategy Center and our Fight for the Soul of Cities had a demonstration in front of the Los Angeles Unified School District. You can look for us in the laschoolreport.com. We had almost 300 people there, and thanks to Dignity in Schools campaign, they brought almost 100 people themselves. Students came from Roosevelt High School, from Augustus Hawkins High School, and not one member of the board came out. But the particular struggle we're having with them right now is called Tell the Truth, Apologize, and Reparations. And I was thinking this morning about apology. Why is that so important? Because the United States has to apologize for what it did in Vietnam. The United States has to apologize for the transatlantic slave trade. They don't want to apologize because it shows liability. See, they don't want to admit they did something wrong. And I think the demand for an apology is very revolutionary.
I actually agree. Absolutely. I also agree with this idea of reparations. It must happen. It has destroyed families and children's lives.
Well, what we've done, which we think is interesting, is we've tied the issue of reparations to repairing specific things, such as cutting the budget of the school police by 50%. Now, in the conversations that we've been having, there's been a whole discussion about reducing or getting police out of the schools. How do you feel about that?
I totally support that idea. Having police in schools only serves the purpose to further criminalize young people who have already been de facto criminalized, if you will, in school buildings, in school systems already. Having cops in there only literally escalates what happens between teachers, principals, and other staff within school buildings, where kids are actually literally going through the legal process earlier and earlier and earlier.
Well, you know, I was thinking of the tie-in to the end of this. The first step of our conversation is, first you pathologize the behavior of a very normal and beautiful 3-year-old black boy, And then you use that to justify the police.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one of the things that I've been preaching and really talking about here in my community, and to get folks to start thinking about this idea of decriminalizing childhood. Things when I grew up, you know, not too long ago, but like talking in school now is even criminalized, is even punished punitively. I mean, talking, you know, I mean, stuff that, I mean, just kids do. Kids may, you know, what is it called when they ball up paper, you know, spitballs or something, and throw it across the room. I mean, childhood, stuff that kids do is actually criminalized. And as you say, sometimes SROs are even called in for those situations and police officers. So I think that we have to start changing the narrative to something like that. At least what we're doing locally is saying we want to decriminalize childhood, and we need people to understand childhood and adolescent development and behavior. There's no reason to criminalize things that is normal for children to do, period. Certainly no reason to call the cops.
And I would say especially stop criminalizing black childhood, because white childhood is allowed to do all kinds of crazy stuff.
Absolutely.
It's called boys will be boys. It's called, he's going through a stage, a phase. The school covers up for these kids. They're smoking, you know, whatever they're smoking. They steal stuff. Trust me, they are not having these well-behaved white kids, but those white kids land on their feet.
That's right.
What's your last word for the listeners from Voices from the Frontlines, Zakiya, and we'll have you back on again?
Yes, I look forward to coming back on. My last word is, I think that we have to begin to really start having these conversations more in our local communities. I want people to understand that we must have a national strategy where we are able to get the ear of the President of the United States and others to stop investing in criminalization of black and brown bodies. I think that it's so prevalent that it's almost normal, even us as people of color, and we accept it. And I think that a part of what we can do on radio shows like this, and what we can continue to do as we build these national relationships, is at the very grassroots level in small towns like Little Dayton, Ohio, and other places, start having these critical conversations, and also start to demand and try to get more resources and support for smaller towns and smaller organizations to be able to really scale up the work that we need to happen. It has to happen at the grassroots level before it can be a national movement. And I think that's what's critical to understand, definitely.
The voice you hear is Zakiya Sankar-Jabbar. I want to end by saying, Zakiya, that we're going to put Voices from the Frontlines now. We're trying to figure out how to send it out as a link. So your interview will be in an email link that Channing Martinez is going to figure out, along with some other interviews on the show. If you could take it and then send it out to all your friends and ask them to sign up on our website, www.voicesfromthefrontlines.com, including all our listeners here, then you get a weekly bulletin on what's going to be on the show, and we're going to try to figure out how to do a weekly email that has the links to everybody on the show. So, Zakiya, we want to get the word out about your work. Thank you so much for being on Voices from the Frontlines. Let's keep talking.
Thanks so much, Eric. Take care.
Take care of yourself.
Bye-bye.
Here comes the sun, little darling. Here comes the sun.